It's 8:24 and we're going now to hear about a fairly distressing story overnight which has emerged about the dangers of covering the situations in Iraq and Syria particularly are very obvious. The latest figures, I think, about 40 journalists have been killed in Syria alone since the conflict there started. But there's a video which has been circulating online which comes from ISIS extremists in Syria, which shows the murder of one particular by beheading of one American journalist, James Foley, and has threatened another American who is held in that country if the Americans don't end military operations in Iraq. On the line is Rosemary Hollis, Professor of Middle East Policy Studies at the City University in London. And thank you very much for talking to us. The threat is obvious. One man is dead, and circulating online makes the intentions of ISIS even more stark. How effective do you think this is? There evidence for seeing how effective this has been and might be in the future?
You mean as a tactic against the United States? Well, unfortunately, because the person killed was a journalist, the United States has long since let it be known that they're not going to regard journalists in the field at battle sites as a sort of national asset in the same way as, for example, US personnel in Iraqi Kurdistan are regarded as the object for protection in the current US airstrikes on the Islamic State forces. It is, unfortunately, something that we're probably going to see more of, because kidnap and demands in the context of kidnap is one of the methods used by the Islamic State forces. And it's a method used by other militant anti-state forces across the region and has been since the 1980s, if not before.
I suppose the deeper question I was trying to drive out in my clumsy first question to you was the effect of people who are willing to murder people so freely and put it on video and have their followers and other people who have no sense circulate it, the effect and the potency of that threat against the Americans who are obviously who have enormous air power, but in terms of balance of forces, how effective is it and is it likely to be?
Well, they are a very powerful enemy in the sense that they are prepared to fight dirty, as you're implying, and they are on the ground in amongst the civilian population. They have won over members of the civilian population, not universally, but generally, in northern Syria and northern Iraq, and that presents a challenge to the United States, which really cannot be defeated, cannot be rooted out, cannot be ended simply by the use of air power. And therefore, the specter is out there that at some stage Americans could get drawn in, sucked back into Iraq, sucked into Syria, indeed, on the ground. And at the moment, what the Americans are hoping is that they can persuade and back the Kurds and other Iraqis to do the fighting on the ground rather than having to do it themselves.
Well, thank you for that assessment, Rosemary. And I want to turn now to the original reason we wanted to talk to you, which is what is happening in Gaza. Another ceasefire breaking down and the Israelis bringing their people home from the peace talks in Cairo, where there has been a logjam we've known about. So another ceasefire breaking down, talks breaking down again. How significant?
Well, there are some commonalities in terms of how the Israelis understand the challenge that Hamas represents to them and how the Americans are dealing with the forces of the Islamic State in Iraq, in the sense that what Hamas is doing is hanging out in the Cairo talks for some kind of gain as a result of all the deaths and injuries that they've sustained in this last round of warfare with the Israelis. And they know that at some level, they do have bargaining power at the negotiating table with the Israelis, because ultimately they can tempt the Israelis to go back into Gaza on the ground in an effort to eliminate the Hamas problem, knowing that that would mean heavy casualties for the Israeli soldiers and is therefore something that they don't want to have to do.
Just one something I want to ask you about, which is the role of Egypt in all of this. We know what Hamas is doing. We know what the Israelis are doing. Is the Egyptian government or its rulers under any pressure at all, given that they are party to this conflict and party to sealing off Gaza and preventing people from escaping the attacks which have killed so many?
Well, I think they regard Hamas as their enemy. So they're not exactly even-handed mediators in this situation. And one of the reasons why the conflict is going to rumble on is that at the moment, none of the players involved, apart from Hamas, is prepared to grant Hamas a break. The only game changer that I can think of is if there were international, let's say, spearheaded by the UN, not the US, intervention to say, OK, we're going to require Hamas to look after Gaza in return for the opening up of a port, the possibility of trade with the rest of the world, and they have to vow not to attack Israel for an interim period while we try and restore life and well-being in Gaza, which is a big proposition. But at the moment, that possibility or anything, a game changer like that, is blocked by the fact that both the Egyptians and the Israelis, backed by the Americans, want to deny Hamas a role in the future of Gaza.
Rosemary Hollis, thank you very much.